So here we are for Spotlight on Arts with John Costa and my colleague Rob Watson. How are you this week, Rob?
Very well, thank you.
Cool.
It's, yes, it's very well. It does help if I open the microphone.
It's like podcasting 101, isn't it? It's only week two, so we're still getting back into it. But I'm delighted that we've got our guest joining this week. It's Sean Carroll, which is a bit like Coles for Newcastle, really, because we're recording this in the New Media Art Club room. So this is like coming into his own office because he can come in here now. We've not booked it for 2 hours. So, Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for welcoming me in.
To your own space, yeah. So, listen, the idea is we're recording this Spotlight on Arts just to try and get beyond not just doing sort of events listings and what's going on and that stuff, but maybe starting to probably for the first time find out a little bit about, you know, who the artists are and get behind the story, where it started, but also people like yourself who are quite keen, but also very key in the local art scene, digital art scene, creative scene, for and have been for quite a while, pulling all these kind of events together. So, you know, how do you describe yourself? You know, if you meet someone for the first time, how do you describe yourself?
I generally just say I do art stuff and leave it at that. Yeah. It's a difficult one. I think especially with New Media Art Club, we're really interested in helping people put arts events on. And I guess I've always been interested in that. Bringing things together, putting exhibitions together, performances. It's a really difficult question to put a very specific ring around.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I asked you about you then, and then you started talking about collectives and helping other people and all that sort of stuff. And I'd say that that's pretty much who you are, isn't it? So when someone asks you about you, you never talk about your own interest or creative practice or being an artist or anything like that. You always go into, you know, we organise and help things, people to do that. I think with you and Noosh, that's exactly, I think, why you're so perfect for the New Media Art Club, is or this of what you do here with your colleagues, like, you know, Sean Clark and Maz and people, is because you always put other people first.
Well, I think what we...
Do you notice you doing that?
What we...
Is that a conscious decision?
I hadn't particularly noticed that, but maybe. What we wanted to do with New Media Art Club, I mean, it's a company that only is 2 years old now, and we've really just started doing public facing stuff last year, but the goal from the beginning was we felt like what we both really wanted to do was help artists develop their own practice, but also look for the kind of opportunities and find ways to find the kind of support that are really difficult to find, you know? So that's the point of the club. We were like, this is what we both want to be doing. Let's try and consolidate that into a little bit more of a focus around art that involves new media, which is kind of both of our interests.
So it was a way for you and Noosh to sort of collaborate and then work together in a much more formalised way rather than on other people's events and stuff. It was something that you had for yourselves.
A bit of both. It is still on other people's events. I guess it is a way to work together, but also a way to just, yeah, consolidate the different types of work we've been doing and consolidate the way we've been working for a while.
Okay.
Which is really driven around helping people make more work. You know, that is the most difficult thing for artists, is not necessarily just coming up with the idea or painting the picture or anything. It's getting it into the world in a place where people can see it, and it's getting recognized for it, and it's getting compensated for the work you do. These are the super difficult things.
Yeah. And not just being seen online, but actually in physical environments at events with real people visiting and giving you sort of real-time feedback as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely. There's being seen online is great. There is a real value in being in a space with people still. And we found that at the recent exhibition, we were really overwhelmed by the people that showed up, you know, for the launch was really well attended. The closing party you were at as well. You're one of our exhibiting artists, in fact, was really well attended. And it's fantastic to see, especially in, you know, there's still a lot of discourse around how COVID has affected the way people engage in real life. And it's, you know, it's fantastic to see events where people are in the same space together and are discussing and working together and building ideas together.
So Sean, you were talking there about the recent event, Computala. So how did that come about? Take us on a bit of a timeline. How does that happen from the initial idea, seed or germ of an idea to it being on? How long did that take? Was it a couple of years, a couple of months?
So I guess a few years ago, Chris Slow from the LCB Depot asked Nush to help curate the digital art season. I think he was away for a little part of January, so he wanted someone who had some expertise in that area to get involved and support a little bit. And that went really well. That was a fantastic exhibition. On the back of that, we sat down and talked about whether we would be able to put some time into fundraising for it in future years and having it as more of an event that we would, have more of a curatorial role in going forward. So Computala is the third time that we've collaborated with LCB on the digital art season. From coming up with the idea to fundraising to delivering it is probably about 7 or 8 months. So it is the best part of the year. A lot of that isn't full-time work. A lot of that is waiting around for decisions on fundraising. But yeah, so we probably started work on that in March. Just finished delivering it in January. It went fantastically well. We're currently in the process of evaluating and have already started thinking about next year.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was something I've never done before. It's certainly something I'd never even thought about, you know, digital art and stuff. And then as soon as you mentioned the theme was around sort of connective technology and sort of, you know, if you wanted to mention the early days of the internet, that'd be great. And I was like, well, actually, that fits perfectly with Citizens Eyes Archive in the Museum of Community Media. So how could I do that? So it was wonderful to have those three glass cases, have that sort of almost like what people would see as a traditional exhibit from a museum perspective, and then collaborate with the digital artist Jaz Singh, bringing those five films to life with his own version of it. And I think, you know, the feedback that I got from conversations that I had with people, they really liked the fact that it was this kind of real mix of AI, you know, Game Boy photography, you know, Minecraft and all these kind of things. And then, you know, different opportunities and stuff. I think that was the great thing about it. There was something for everybody, that you could almost be interested in something you weren't interested in because it was about the technology. I mean, the evaluation you're doing at the moment, the feedback, you know, has it been really positive from your perspective?
Yeah, it's been really
positive. It's not just hanging stuff on the wall, is it, or laying it out? I mean, there's a little bit more thought goes into it than that.
No, I think what we're hoping would go well and what I think's gone really well is the theme, you know, the curatorial decisioning around it was to ask artists to explore their relationship with the internet, you know, what that idea of connective technology has meant to them. And that was a specific decision rather than frame it as a digital art exhibition, because I find that, I mean, you know, we work in digital arts and computer arts a lot of the time, and we put open calls out, and the people that respond are people that identify as digital artists. And that's great. But when we're talking about connective technology, it is applicable to everyone. You know, everyone has a relationship with this technology. So we were really keen in the way that we positioned that call to make it feel accessible to everyone. And I think that was reflected in the scope of work that we got back. So we were really pleased with that. Feedback has, you know, it's been very positive. A lot of people have specifically mention the different types of artwork, not just screen-based artwork at all. There was yourselves, but there was also a lot of other sculptural work, lots of floor-based work.
Teletext, there was a teletext thing as well. Wasn't
teletext, there? But also there was a real depth of people's personal narratives there. You know, there was lots of work about identity, about history. And, you know, again, we were really pleased to be able to tell a lot of different stories in the same vehicle in a way that we felt was quite authentic.
So before I talk to you about what you're studying for your PhD, tell us what's the subject area? What you're studying?
I'm researching the use of artificial intelligence to support art collections to make them more accessible for people.
Okay, so right now, rewind right back to what's your earliest memory you can remember you describing yourself to someone, or you know, you were aspiring to be an artist or a creative or something like that. Was it school? Was it college? Was it, you know, only when you got older? Would you still not describe yourself like that?
No,
I
was in a way lucky, I guess, but I was 100% sure from as far as I could remember that I was going to be some form of writer. As it turns out, I don't do much creative writing, but I do write about art a lot, you know.
In funding bids.
Yeah.
Bit of an expertise, in funding bid writing.
Yeah, no, I from as early as I can remember, I knew I would do something to do with writing and music. And I never really felt like I had any other options. I'm not sure. I have never considered another career. Yeah.
And has that come from a family environment? Has that come from a friendship group environment or anything like that? It's just you've always innately felt it. Yeah, it's
no,
you.
Not at all. No. I mean, my sisters were very into music growing up. Different types of music and I think that was probably helpful in terms of being exposed to different types of artwork, but I have always been certain that it would involve working in the arts.
Now, one of the things I've discovered over the years, teaching part-time at the uni for the 6 years I did and working with my colleague Rob, when Rob was at university and, you know, with Tina going into coffee shops and stuff, is the amount of food and coffee that I've been served over the years by people that are creatives, that, you know, doing it at university and they're working, you know, to pay the bills quite rightly. And when you've got a stomach that's not rumbling, then you can probably be much more creative than when you're worrying about paying your bills. How important do you think it is to be able to get a role in a creative setting, like say here at the depot, or, you know, the work that you've done at the Phoenix, you know, being in the film projection booth and stuff, just being around that environment, is that helpful? Because a lot of people say, oh, if you want to do that, you should kind of hang out in the places and then volunteer and kind of work in that, you know, become an usher and then you're in a creative environment. Does that help in your perspective, or is it more about what you do to find those people?
I think, you know, both. It is certainly the case, for better or for worse, you know, that opportunities become available to people that put themselves in front of them. And that's more to do with, I guess, freelance working. You know, it's very difficult to make a living as a freelancer unless you're actively, assertively putting yourself in front of people that hire freelancers. And people, you know, that's quite a difficult thing to become comfortable doing, especially for artists who, you know, making artwork and trying to share your artwork with people requires a level of vulnerability, right? And being consistently vulnerable like that is quite difficult for artists, but is also key to getting that consistent level of work. Yeah.
Now, you've been involved in lots of events, haven't you, over the years? You know, Creative Manifesto, you've been involved in Indian Summer and that sort of stuff. I mean, is all that stuff really good grounding? Is it something where you can ever not be successful? Do you ever reach a point where you've cracked it, or is it this sector's more about just being involved in things and immersing yourself? It's never about career path. It's more about just enjoying yourself and then developing your own practice.
I think I'm quite hard on whether or not I've cracked it or not. You know, I think you have to be very clear when you're putting events on specifically what you want to get out of it. For me, I find it very important to feel like we've created something that's been valuable for people. And I think it's also important to be a little bit hard on yourself in terms of how successful you've been, because at the point where you stop being hard on yourself, it stops being urgent, you know, to be better.
That's an interesting point, actually. Yeah. So you were saying about, you know, your first memory, you thought you were always going to be doing this kind of stuff. And I've known you, you know, doing events and bits and pieces. And here we are talking, you know, in your room for the New Media Art Club. Has there been a path, or is it just been more a reactive journey to what's presented itself to you? You know, did you see that you were ever going to get to this point? Or has it been more, you know, what's happened to you has got you to this point where now maybe you're recognised and have got a particular expertise in the services that you provide as a freelancer?
I don't know that I was sure we get to a point. I think, you know, you can never dwell on what the path is too much. People tell me, you know, you need to have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan or whatever. But I think the important thing for me has always been, you know, when I focus too much on 5 years and 10-year plans, I start to overcomplicate things and fly off in different directions. The important thing is to immerse yourself in what you want to achieve short term. You know, short term goals lead to long term goals. And short-term goals are actually the most important part of progression. You know, like practical steps to idealistic goals, right? Mm.
Are there still people that you know in your friendship circle, in your family, who are still waiting for you to get a real job?
I don't think anyone ever expected me to get a real job.
So you've always been like this, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting, because I think it's a lot of pressure we put on young people, particularly those that are creative, to almost turn around and go, well, make that your hobby because there's no money in it. So kind of get yourself a real job, you know, become a plumber. You'll be so much better at your art if you're plumbing because you can pay the bills. You know, there was never that kind of pressure on you to get a real job.
When I was very young, I remember my dad telling me to be a long-distance driver and then I could do what I wanted the rest of the time. And I told him I didn't want to do that, and then he gave up on that pretty quickly. He tried to teach me to be a handyman, but I was very clumsy, so he also gave up on that too.
So if you were to go into a college or university now talking to a group of young people that wanted to be creative, would you be able to tell them what they needed to hear, or would you not put yourself in that situation because you couldn't not tell them the truth?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the truth, you know.
Become it's a long-distance lorry driver. I'm saying, would you be finding yourself giving yourself other people? get yourself a plumbing NVQ, and then you'll be able to be a creative.
You know, like any job that you...
Because it's hard to be true to your own convictions.
Any job or role or something that you... do to your best ability requires a level of vulnerability, and that also requires the acceptance that you won't become better at it without failing first. There's a really good quote, I can't remember it, but I always read it sometimes, by Bukowski, the writer, and he's got this poem, and he says, you find someone, I don't know if you know Bukowski, he's very famous for being a really grumpy poet, you know, and kind of sarcastically.
Pinterest's full of him, isn't it?
Someone, an interviewer asked him what the key to happiness was. And he said, you find what you love and then you let it kill you. You know, and I really like that because, like, something's going to kill you sooner or later, right? Like, life's going to kill you, right? So you have a choice to just do the thing that you love or not do it. And when you can, like, when you realize it's less of a gray area,
because it's normally
just
other
doing
people's,
it becomes obvious.
It's normally other people's view of you doing that is, oh, you should do this, you should try this. You know, to kind of being true to yourself is quite difficult, isn't it? In a conformist way that we live now with social media and fitting in and people.
It is. I think life's too short though, you know, like for me anyway, I think. And I think maybe that's why I've always knew what I was going to do because you never know. I feel like we're taking a glum turn here, but you know,
No, not at all. I think it's people need to hear this kind of thing as well because they're put off from pursuing what they want and they're listening to this going, do you know what? Rather than having a hobby, I should just try this because it can work or what is success or failure? Well, it's only having a go, isn't it, really?
It is only having a go and it's the consistency and, you know, the most important thing to do is to show up, right? And do it and then be bad and then do it again and, you know, fail and fail again, but fail better, you know? And if you can be comfortable with that, then sooner or later you get better at something. And yeah.
So before we dive into AI, because I think that's going to take up 4 or 5 minutes, does organising things and putting on events that help other people stop you from developing your own practice?
Yes. No, I mean,
I'd like to think that's the shortest and most straight answer you've given so far in this. but it's a big thing, isn't it? I mean, I often say to people, I organise events to the point where I give up on organising them because they're the things I've organised because I want to go and I can't go and enjoy myself. I've got bogged down in the organising of it. Like Military History Live, for example, I'd love to go to that event. That's why I put it on. But I stopped doing it because I couldn't go because I was organising.
Yeah, I think I've always found that one of the most important things, if you're putting an event on, one of the most important things you can do for yourself is to hire a really good photographer. Because then when the event's over, you can look back at images and reflect on what happened.
From someone else's perspective.
From someone else's perspective. And especially with event photography, I think it's super important because good event photography isn't just about photographing the event. It's about photographing people being part of the space together.
So
you know,
interacting with what's on display rather than just attending. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be able, for me anyway, because you know you miss all of that at the time and then you sit down and you go, was it any good? I don't know. But documentation is super important because that allows you to then, like you say, yeah, see it back through other people's eyes and reflect on it maybe a bit more honestly without your own self-critique.
Your own self-critique, I like that, yeah. So AI, the question I'm going to ask you about AI is, and we could go in multiple directions, but do you think it's going to be one of those things that shapes how people engage with, I mean, as someone who takes photographs, not very well, I think, but you know, sort of, you know, Photoshop and photo manipulation and awards, world press photo awards, people, you know, not having them, taking them off them when they've manipulated the photograph. What's the role that AI is gonna play in things like, you know, the creative industries and putting on events and stuff like, you know, matched with your PhD? What kind of impact is it going to have? And when do you stop? Because it's evolving all the time. Will you ever finish the PhD?
Oh, yeah, I've got to finish this year. Else I'll be in trouble. Yeah. What role does it play in the creative industries is, I mean, it's a massive question. for me, and you know, I've looked at a lot of these models in quite a bit of detail at this point, and I feel like the changes it will make, and you know, I may be wrong, but I feel like the changes that it makes initially definitely will probably be less substantive than people are potentially afraid of. And I think a lot of that comes down to the AI's ability to reason at the moment. And this is a big topic for discussion about how to push this forward. But at the moment, it's quite limited. There's a lot of this research draws a parallel between, there's a psychologist called Daniel Kahneman, who discusses human cognition as either fast or slow thinking, you know, fast thinking being instant reactions and kind of gut responses to things, and slow thinking being that more methodological chain of thought, reasoning out structures and answers. And AI at the moment is very much in the first camp. And what that means is reflected a little bit in the quality of outputs that you see sometimes, you know, like for instance, the image generators can make objectively fantastic images, but it's very difficult to get them out of the style of image that they make. So what you get is this AI footprint, if you like, and you also get this with text as well, you know. And the more people read it or see it, the more people start to pick up on it. And it's a little bit like, it is sort of analogous to the way you pick up on a song by your favorite songwriter. You know, it has their style, right? But the issue with the current AI models is, although on first interaction with them, they're fantastic, on more sustained interaction, you do start to pick up that they're replicating the same sorts of outputs, and they become more homogenous. And the thing is as well, there is that does make making higher quality content for smaller organizations, especially, it does make it easier. But it also, although that will lead, unfortunately, to especially, you know, less roles for people like graphic designers in some degree, the fact that there's more homogenized, similar content out there does mean that the opportunity to stand out and be better is still there.
That's a really interesting point, isn't it? So it's not over for you. It's more about, can you make yourself indispensable because you're able to come up with things that are not homogenous and are not like everybody else is using? Yeah, that's interesting. Well, listen, Sean, thanks for joining us. I really enjoyed this, actually. I think it's one of these things that could end up being like a 4 or 5 hour conversation about AI and the impact on careers and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think getting you back again, I think a couple of times to kind of take us on a bit of a journey would be great. But, you know, what's next for you? What are you working on at the moment as a new media art club? You know, what's in the next 12 months? What can we expect to see following on from Computala?
Yeah, so we have a course on curating with AI, which is open at the moment. That's going to be looking at some language models and how they can interrogate the computer arts archive, specifically this one. So it is a little bit of an offshoot from my research. We have a boot camp open at the moment for drawing with CSS, which is, again, come off the Computala project, you know, as a way of exploring web technologies and the way that artists can kind of appropriate that technology to make images with. And then we are back to fundraising. So we're going to be looking at Computala for next year with a theme of AI. So we're going to be looking at... we're going to be doing a lot of thinking about what that exhibition could look like, how to get people involved with it, what kind of opportunities are going to bring people into the exhibition to make work, to, you know, be challenged by the themes and engage with them.
So just final thing, final couple of minutes. How do you approach your social media use when it comes to promoting your events? Because again, you know, it's quite difficult sometimes, you know, when there's not a central newspaper or a central website. And I think this has always been one of Leicester's issues, isn't it? About, you know, who are the, is there any custodian of the where to go for the what's on guide type thing? You're constantly trying to attract new audiences and new people. I mean, what's your approach to that? Do you just kind of put stuff out there and hope people turn up, or is it the networking, the physical networking? Is it being in the right environment, in the right locations for where you do things?
I think all marketing is fundamentally comes down to word of mouth marketing, right? Social media is a way to encourage word, you know, people to share things. Posters are a way to encourage people to tell other people about stuff that they've seen. I think all marketing ultimately is about getting people to be excited about what you do and share it with someone else. And when that keeps happening, you know, we're doing something right. We do use mainly Instagram because I feel like, I'm not overly enthusiastic about Meta, but you know, I feel like that platform is good for us to find people and it's good for us to visually share stuff. But yeah, we're really keen to look for any opportunity to share what we do with people in a way that they want to share it, right? So really, actually for us, that probably feels like a way of looking for more of a long form engagement, figuring out what that is, you know, more considered critical content, dispersed somehow, you know, as a way to build, I guess, kind of a community of,
and are you constantly seeking that. Collaborations and from people as well?
We have to be, you know, you only get to exist in this world if you're relevant to people, and you're only relevant by having two-way dialogues with people. That's not just audiences, that's other people who are doing similar things to you, you know. We have to learn from each other, else we go backwards.
I don't know about you, Rob, I'm going to vote for Sean, actually. President of somewhere, maybe. Thanks very much for joining us on the Spotlight.
My financial plans are terrible, so my budget wouldn't work.
Cheers, Sean.